Give me some of that Earth, Wind, and Fire. Man, if that doesn't put you in a good mood, you can't be in a good mood.
So true.
If that song doesn't put you in a happy place, there's not a place for you to be happy in this
world. You know
what
it is?
It's all right.
It's a toe tapper.
I'm vibing.
That one's, I think, a certified toe tapper.
Cliff, come on. You got to give me this one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, not going to happen. That's okay. We'll still enjoy the song on this penultimate Golic and Wingo show. Again, our last show is tomorrow, and my last run on ESPN Radio is over tomorrow as well. So we'll have some special things going on tomorrow, which you know will include pastries. But there's sports back. Sure, right as all the sports come back, right?
I can say Notre Dame joins the conference. The NBA is coming back. It's all just in time for us to
go
bye-bye.
There's so much to get to. There's a lot we're trying to process here. The NBA is coming back tonight. We've got the doubleheader. The Jazz and the Pelicans started off.
6:30 Eastern.
Yeah, very nice.
Dan, this is how happy has this made you? You have campaigned so openly for earlier sports times across the board.
6:30 Eastern, the first game. The second game, Clippers and Lakers. These are normally 10:30 slots. 9 Eastern.
Yeah, it's good.
You're going to see that through only one bloodshot eye that's barely open at that point.
I know, it's going to be great.
What a game changer.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. We'll be joined by Doris Burke. Let me rephrase it. We'll be joined by the great, incomparable Hall of Famer on so many levels, Doris Burke, in just a few minutes. Shame on me for not getting that right the first time. But, of course, as we're doing and leading up to the restart of the NBA season, we've been getting you caught up on what teams have or haven't done and you might have missed during all the stuff that went on in the world and affected the world of sports since the March 11th hard shutdown of the NBA regular season. One of those teams that happens and has very high hopes to walk out of Orlando with a championship would be the Boston Celtics. So for more on a status update on the Celts, here's Tim Bontemps, our ESPN NBA reporter.
Golic and Wingo, NBA status update. Boston Celtics.
Hi, this is Tim Bontemps, NBA reporter for ESPN, checking in on what's up with the Boston Celtics heading into the NBA's restart down here in Orlando. Big news around the Celtics over the past couple weeks has been the status of Kemba Walker. He's been dealing with knee issues off and on going back to January and February and March, right up until the NBA shut down. And then a recurrence of those issues once he started ramping back up here this past few weeks. Walker's supposed to play somewhere between, I think, 15 and 20 minutes, Brad Stevens said, in Boston's opening game on Friday against the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Celtics are going to take the next 2 or 3 weeks up until the playoffs to try to ease Walker's minutes up to where he normally would be when the postseason starts. Celtics come into the bubble with high expectations. They hope to make a deep playoff run. Jason Tatum's emergence this year gave them a star to really build around for the long term. Jaylen Brown had a really nice bounce back year after difficulties in his third season in the NBA. And the mix between Gordon Hayward and Kemba Walker and the rest of this Celtic roster has led to much better chemistry than they had last season. The real question is going to be, can that chemistry and these newfound feelings of optimism around the Celtics translate into a deeper playoff run when they could potentially have to play the Philadelphia 76ers, who are a brutal matchup in the first round of the playoffs, the Toronto Raptors, who are at least as good, if not better than them, in the second round, and then potentially face the Milwaukee Bucks again in the Eastern Conference Finals. So really tough road for the Celtics ahead to make a deep playoff run, but they feel confident that they can do so.
Tim, thank you very much. And he mentioned Kemba Walker. And, of course, Kemba Walker is going to try and win a tournament-style situation here in the NBA.
Yeah.
Something he's very familiar with. Remember, Kemba got the nickname Cardiac Kemba when he led UConn to the Big East Championship with 5 wins in 5 days in 2011. The Huskies went on to win the NCAA Championship that year as well. That's part of Kemba's player resume, and it's brought to you by Indeed. Find the high impact hire your business needs at Indeed.com/high impact.
Boston sitting in the third slot right now, 3 games behind Toronto at the second slot, and 2.5 games, I believe, behind Miami in the fourth slot. Again, no home court in here. It's just really who you're going to match up with going into the playoffs. And in their final 8 games, their first game is against Milwaukee. Also do play Miami in these final 8. And their fourth, the last game, in the middle of the thing, they do play Toronto as well. So some of the teams are going to play that could really decide what's going on as far as seeding is concerned.
And I think it's interesting you heard Tim talk about one of the things there and one of the themes coming back is how much of an effect continuity has on this. Our own Kevin Pelton took a look at this over the last couple of years, teams going into the bubble and what percentage of their roster they've brought back from the last 2 years, mm-hmm. who that's going to be inside the bubble was a part of that team. And the Celtics were, I believe, sixth on that list there. Right. They brought back a fair amount of a core that, lest we not forget, accomplished so much over the course of a playoff run and going up against, at that time, the Eastern Conference's LeBron James. So I think it's interesting to see how much of a factor that'll be. Obviously, you're so driven by your stars, but how much continuity is worth in an uncertain space?
Golic and Wingo presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, including our next guest. Oh, I'm sorry. I have to say, despite her continued greatness and all-around just tremendousness, has slacked. She has not been named to a new Hall of Fame in about a year, which is ridiculous.
We're getting worried. That's the Hall of Fame's fault.
Yes, you're right. That's not a Hey DB problem. That's Hall of Fame's problems, not respecting our next guest. And we are delighted to be joined and say, Hey DB to Doris Burke. How are you?
Well, good morning. And I think I will join down here in the bubble a Hall of Fame for which you will be most proud, and that is eating and drinking.
Hey,
there we go.
Yes. When people say,
I might have put on 15 pounds down here in the bubble already, gentlemen.
When people say, why are you friends with Doris Burke? I'm just going to play that clip.
It's like like freshman year in college again, the freshman 15. Huh?
Oh, nothing. But you know what, Doris? Like, you deserve all of the nicest things in the world, so I'm glad you're treating yourself down there in the NBA bubble. How has it been getting used to that environment with all the eating and drinking going on?
You know, it's interesting, guys. I am not, as you know, they have different tiers of credentials, and green is the one where you're closest to the players. We are in yellow because we're calling the game about 75 feet off the floor. So our restrictions are a little bit less than those, you know, in direct proximity to the players. What I will tell you is, I knew this was a massive undertaking. When I started to hear the plan come together and all the reporting on the plan and then reading some of the plan, what you find out very quickly is this was as massive and maybe bigger than you thought it was. No detail has fallen short from the NBA. And I feel as safe as I possibly can. When I saw Greg Popovich say this may be the safest place on earth, and obviously having all the players test negative over their first couple of tests here is significant, and we're progressing, and we begin tonight, and I can't wait.
We are going to talk to Rachel Nichols, I think, at about 9:30 Eastern. She had talked about some of the stories of things, just what you mentioned, Doris, going on behind the scenes of what is making this whole operation run and run so well down in Orlando at Disney. But games are going to start. We're all happy about that. But then after we're all happy, I kind of take a breath and pause and say, okay, in these eight games, is your expectation that, especially for the upper tier teams, that these eight games are going to be treated more like preseason games and you'll see less minutes by the stars?
Yeah, you know, I think especially for those teams that are at the top, the Milwaukees, the Lakers, the Clippers, I think seeding doesn't matter. You know, the home court advantage is basically non-existent. And so I think they're trying to stay healthy. They're trying to catch a rhythm. And something young Mike said, you know, just prior to you coming to me, has really sort of been at the forefront of my mind, because when the hiatus happened and then we knew we were coming down here, my thought was, I give the Lakers the best chance. There isn't a scenario in the playoffs. There isn't a difficulty placed in LeBron James's path that he hasn't already seen. We knew he'd have his team in incredible shape and you know, do what he can to get them in rhythm. But to me, the Milwaukee Bucks, because they have continuity, because they have so grooved their offensive system to run to those five spots, to maximize the three-point line, to enhance everything that Giannis brings to the table, and then to play historically elite defense. Like, we cannot lose sight of the fact that the Bucks are playing a level of defense that we have not seen in the NBA. They are extraordinary inside the paint. They give up the least percentage at the most valuable real estate. And, you know, listen, can somebody who gets hot over a seven-game series from three maybe beat them, or what happened in the East Finals last year where they just shot it abysmally from three? Yes, those are possibilities, but I thought he was right on point, because I do think the teams that have grooved their system have an advantage down here in this scenario.
Doris Burke with us talking about the restart of the NBA season, which begins tonight with a doubleheader and then in earnest tomorrow. Doris, we talked a lot earlier about there's no franchise that perhaps winning a championship would mean more and be more significant than the Milwaukee Bucks because of their uncertain status, no matter what he says, with Giannis Antetokounmpo going forward. Mm-hmm. So if they're the franchise that could be changed the most by winning an NBA championship, what is the possibility that LeBron's legacy, as great as it is, could be even more enhanced by winning a fourth title with a third different team? And I know the same scenario exists for Kawhi, but LeBron is LeBron. He takes the oxygen in the room, and the comparisons have already always been there to the best to ever play. What would that mean in your eyes to LeBron's legacy?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously his legacy is as one of the greatest to ever do it, and certainly the greatest I've ever seen up close and personal to do it. I think it's secure, but I think obviously anytime you add a championship to that resume, and listen, let's not deny the fact that he's probably playing next to the single most talented player. I mean, you could make the case for Dwayne Wade, but the fact of the matter is, look at the number of assists that LeBron has to Anthony Davis. It is by far the most to any individual player in his career. Chris Bosh is a distant second to what he's been able to connect with Anthony Davis. But, you know, what I wonder about and what I think may be being under-talked about is the absence of Avery Bradley and what must be defined in the eight seeding games for the Lakers, and that is who are the guards that take up those minutes. Because Avery Bradley, if you look no further than what he did against the Clippers in their two defining wins in March just prior to the hiatus, his ball pressure at the point of attack, his ability to sort of lead the defense and be disruptive, and then the number of threes made against the Los Angeles Clippers. Like, is it J.R. Smith or Deion Waiters who gets an opportunity? Is Alex Caruso, who has been so critical to what they've done this year, able to provide enough offense with the defense that he plays? What happens when LeBron James is off the floor for the Los Angeles Lakers? His minutes will be huge, but there's going to be 2 or 3 minute windows where he gets a rest. And those can define a series. What happens? I'm really curious about that.
Doris Burke joining us here on Golic and Wingo. And that's the talk at the top, of, especially the top of the conferences and or the NBA championship. But there are other things we're looking at as well, especially in that first game, Utah playing the Pelicans. That's Zion Williamson. Everybody, I'm sure, many people are hoping New Orleans can get to that A slot to play the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs. But there's no real thought of New Orleans really doing anything as far as being near the top this year. So how do you think Zion will be played in these eight games trying to get to the playoffs? And how do you think he should be played?
Yeah, my guess is they have taken the long view this entire time because I think they know the kind of talent they have in Zion Williamson. And so, and I don't think this is necessarily limited to just the Pelicans. You know, what happens if you get out of the gate slowly across the board on any number of teams? You know, I saw Adrian Wojnarowski, you know, reported, you know, a few weeks ago that basically some of these teams would look at this in the long view and say, listen, we're not going to put our players at risk in any way. And so it's that will be fascinating to me is if some of these teams, like a New Orleans, gets out of the gate slowly, what happens to the minutes and the productivity of their respective stars versus a team like the Phoenix Suns, who Monty Williams said, other than the teams competing for a championship, no one has more at stake here than us. You know, we're a young team on the rise, and you can see it. I had them, you know, we sort of did a dry run with the Phoenix Suns, and they played it, you know, like this was a regular season game because they're trying to maximize the 11 games they have here. Philosophically, I think you'll see approaches across the board from these organizations.
And it all begins tonight, and we'll see what happens when it all starts. Doris?
Don't let me go without saying I'm going to miss the three of you. It has been my privilege to be on the show with all of you. I have admired your work. I admire more your character as men. So I just thank you for letting me be a part of your show over the last couple of years, guys. It's meant the world to me.
And this is from a woman who I once called Boris Dirk.
Yes, you did.
So, well, Doris, you know that love is real.
Yes. We appreciate you helping this show sound way smarter than it really is for all those years. Thank you, Doris.
Thank you,
Doris.
Thanks, Stevie.
Be well, guys.
You get to keep talking to her, you and Chiné.
God willing, man. Like, listen.
August 17th.
August 17th. Thankfully, I have Chiné there, so Doris will actually want to come talk to us.
And I love the part about the teams that aren't really going to be in it. We have made the comparison to that Midland College team that makes that bowl game, and everybody's like, oh, my God, you're 6-6. Why are you going to a bowl game? You're going to a bowl game for the 15 practices you get before the bowl game. That's what coaches want. They can practice their young guys. They can get more work out of their players. And that's what these lesser teams that don't have a really shot at anything are going to do in playing minutes of their younger players.
Think about it. Teams were so concerned about getting those kind of minutes to develop players that they almost did the delete eight bubble in Chicago that they thankfully just let die on the
that
vine.
That did just die, didn't it?
Yep. Yeah. We're not going to talk about that anymore.
What? Yeah, what was that going to be?
Hey, you remember that?
That's what it was going to be. But no,
oh, wait. It was the NIT.
Well, it was, but I do understand from a coach's perspective getting those guys on the court and playing, but yeah, that's probably better off just kind of withering away.
Yep. Yeah. So about that, we're going to pass.
Yeah.
And apparently in baseball, Major League Baseball has passed on any retribution for the Houston Astros in any way, shape, or form. Because if you didn't hear, Joe Kelly, the reliever for the Dodgers, has been suspended eight games. Which is the equivalent to 22 games in a regular 162-game season on more than one occasion a couple of nights ago, throwing at or around or behind the heads of several Astro players, Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa, most notably, which led to a little kerfuffle, which had everybody running out onto the field where there was no social distancing, which is a big part of the problem because Marlins are still dealing with that massive COVID outbreak. But at the end of the day, what it means is that the Dodgers – are really getting hammered here for something that most people in baseball, including the umpires in the game, by the way, who were sort of letting Joe Kelly do this a couple of times without really saying, hey, stop that.
Well, there was
now.
No warning. There was no warning to Joe Kelly at all. There was one warning assessed in this game, and it was to the Astros.
Yeah.
Not to Joe Kelly or the Dodgers.
And so Buster Olney, our fine baseball insider, basically said, the Dodgers, they are perturbed about this.
Within the Dodgers organization, there's absolute outrage and shock over this decision because an 8-game suspension in a 60-game season is the equivalent of a 21-game suspension. Within the Dodgers organization, there's a feeling of, look, he didn't hit Bregman. He actually, in their eyes, didn't even come close to hitting him, and they felt like Dusty Baker was screaming at Kelly in that inning from the Houston dugout. They were absolutely surprised by the length of the suspension, especially because Kelly is a reliever.
Well, Dusty Baker got fined from the Astros. Dave Roberts, the manager for the Dodgers, got suspended one game, which I believe he served last night.
Yep.
And then the 8 games for Kelly, which he's appealing. And I do believe a lot of people think that may be halved. Maybe 4 games, maybe 3, 4, 5 games in that area there. Now, we all believe he got suspended for. He has a little bit of a track record in this, so it's not like it's a first time. And also it led to something they don't want is close proximity outside of the game, and that's bench clearing. We say, you know, I say bench clearing brawl. It wasn't, but people were not social distancing. It didn't get too crazy, but they got too close, which everybody, and Mike, we know this was going to happen. That the optics were going to be nothing happened to the players, and we know baseball's reason why, because they needed the players to tell the story about the sign stealing, so they got immunity for this, but nothing happened to them, and Rob Manfred came out hard in the offseason and said, if there's any retribution, we're going to come down hard on you, and this, he's living up to his word there, but the optics certainly don't look great.
Yeah, it's amazing that we were prepared for this moment, and when we got here, there are still this many people that are understandably upset about the timing and the context, because I will say, long been a proponent of the idea that throwing at guys, especially throwing high on guys in Major League Baseball, ain't the way to go. You're setting yourself up for something potentially awful at some point. And so punishing it at a higher level was always something I said, if Major League Baseball was serious about getting that out of the game in ways they put lip service to but never actual teeth to, this would be a place to start. Suspensions of this length, or in this case, percentage. But we know with this backdrop, it's going to be a lot tougher to sell people, especially because for most people, like, I looked at that and I was like, all right, I get it. I don't really like throwing high on guys. I don't think it makes you tough. But But for most of the baseball public, Joe Kelly is a hero now.
He is. But let's be honest about a couple of things. I think everyone was all in on seeing how the Astros are going to have to deal with all this crap all season long, right? We were all fascinated by that from a fan's perspective and how it's going to be legislated by the players. I can promise you, at the Super Bowl, I spoke to a couple of prominent players on a team that has very high aspirations, and they're like, they're going to see some high, hard ones from us on a regular basis. Baseball has actually now legislated that out of being the possibility. And you understand that because of what's going on in the environment we're living in with the pandemic still going on and still baseball having a massive outbreak problem, specifically with one team. And that's why Tim Kirkjian says basically baseball had to do what they did with Joe Kelly.
Baseball's very concerned about this, and it should be, but that's why the suspension was so harsh. Baseball is saying we are not putting up with this because the ramifications of something like this could lead to something really bad, a spread of COVID. So that's why baseball was as harsh as it was, and I frankly don't blame them for the 8 games.
So now if I'm a team that's looking to maybe seek some justice against the Houston Astros, my thought process is, all right, I need probably, and I think the Levitard Show guys have always talked about this, bringing in the sort of like baseball goon that you have in the bullpen. And that. But even that, it's saying, all right, you know what? It'll be a guy with no track record and all this or not a history that you can tie to like that. Well, the rest of the team will agree. We're going to stay in the dugout on this one and not put anyone in a compromised situation and then probably go out there and still attempt some version of beanball and see what happens.
Because the reason you can stay in the dugout is nobody's starting a fight with a pitcher, because anybody that goes out there and gets into physical confrontation, they're all going to get hammered.
And
by
we
the
saw even in this one, like Trey, I know you said there wasn't much social distancing. There was more than you would see in a normal major league scrum, even though nothing usually happens. There's enough pushing, hoarding, crowding, and all that didn't exist in the situation. So they were aware enough.
They were coming out. You kind of thought they were like, okay, how close can we get? You know, what do we do here? And that kind of kept them apart a little bit.
Well, it's like one of the first arguments with the Pirates and the home plate umpire.
Oh, yeah.
They started to go out there and like, let me put on my mask.
Let me put on my mask.
I'm very upset with what you did. Well, I don't like your color schemes either. You know, it was this sort of awkward dance. But when we've seen players high-fiving and dogpiling after big hits, you have to drive it through. Things cannot be normal if you want to have normal things.
I guess this is just to say that while this is a great deterrent, because this is what Major League Baseball intended and what they're going to get, I have a feeling people are still going to be looking for ways to get their retribution in. And based on what we saw with the umps and the players, they'll find it.
All right. Coming Deep up breath. Next, a list where the best player is ranked fourth and the best wide receiver is not even in the top 10. What do we make of that list? We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. How you feeling now?
Well, okay. So I'm going to say something and then I'm going to spin it forward because, listen, you got to keep moving forward, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So I was wrong on that.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
You sure?
But it did give us the God's green earth decree, which has been an important marker for
it
this show.
It has. I think for the most part I've hit the God green earth, but I missed on that one, my first one, and I missed on it. So I accept that. But it doesn't deter me from keeping going with my predictions.
Why would it?
And I'm going to do it again right now.
Shoot or shoot, man.
For you, all you people who love fishing out there, the Bassmasters Elite Series on ESPN2, their tour has started up again. My boy Mark Zona on the call there with Tommy Sanders. They're on Lake Champlain this week in New York and Vermont area. Last week, they were at the St. Lawrence River, and I predicted on Thursday, the first day of it, Chris Johnston, the Canadian, would win. And he won. First Canadian to ever win on the series. So I'm going to pick Seth Fighter for this one. The Minnesotan, I think, is going to win this Bassmasters Elite Series in Lake Champlain. Isn't it Minnesotan?
No,
that sounds pretty good.
Minnesotan. Yeah. Oh, for like cute. That.
Yeah, for sure.
There you go. So I hit it last week.
Wow.
So Seth Fighter I'm going with for this week to win it. And I'm trying to make all these little these things make up for the one big one I missed.
You got to green earth again?
No, I'm not going to do that. A lot of guys out there, you know, fighting for those bass.
But if you're looking to cash some, you know, maybe easy weekend money on some Bassmaster action, Dad's got you covered on this one. We're going out in style.
I am ready to go. Put a few shekels on my man, Seth Fighter.
I mean, you got to feel good that there's a list that thinks that he's only the fourth best player in football.
So now that I got that out of the way, let's get to a guy that's getting $500 million and is considered by his peers the fourth best player in the league.
This is why we can't have nice things. Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. So the NFL Network put out its top 100 list. They do every year. And again, if you're wondering, well, what's the criteria for this? It's people sending in votes, right? It's just players sending in votes.
When they feel like it.
When they get around to it. And just so you know, sometimes that's not the greatest arbiter of things. Like, there was a longtime player in the NFL who shall remain nameless, who several teammates have told me he would sit in his locker for hours on end and just punch, best vote me for the Pro Bowl. Just padding the vote by tens of thousands of votes, which might be good for him. Flex, all that kind of stuff. But so these are the kind of things that happen. And if you haven't seen it, the top 10 were released yesterday. And the top player in the NFL, on sort of an ambiguous criteria, was Lamar Jackson. Second on that list was Russell Wilson. Third was Aaron Donald. Fourth was Patrick Mahomes. And fifth was what, Christian McCaffrey?
No, Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas. Sixth was McCaffrey.
McCaffrey. Seven, George Kittle. Eight, DeAndre Hopkins. Nine, Stephon Gilmore. And 10, Derrick Henry.
So a couple of things here. First of all, I guess when I'm looking at this list, I'm like, well, who's the best player? To me, it's not what did you do last season. Who is the best player in football? There's no debate. Well, look, I literally, you know how much I love Patrick Mahomes. You know that, right? I could live in a world where right now you could say Russell Wilson is one and Patrick Mahomes is two. I don't want to live in that world, but I could live in that world based on body of work.
But you could also say that people look at Lamar Jackson and say he was the MVP last year.
He was.
You know, he was the MVP, so he was considered by vote.
But that's last year.
Understood. Yeah. But, you know, you're basing off Pat Mahomes what he did last year. He's MVP of the Super Bowl.
I'm basing Pat Mahomes on what I believe he is.
Well, and I think there are a lot of people. And listen, I think Pat Mahomes should be first, but Lamar Jackson is coming off of MVP season. Their team, they did well in the offseason. There's a lot of people that think he'll take a next step and become even better. So, I mean, I guess there's part of me that could understand a Russell Wilson thought, a Lamar Jackson thought. I wouldn't. I would seriously go Patrick Mahomes in this one. But I do think there can be reasoning to decide why you want to pick somebody else.
Yeah, I wonder what the outrage would have been like if Pat had been, and probably would have been lesser because everyone looks and says Patrick Mahomes is number one, but if you had your reigning MVP in Lamar Jackson below him, a guy that everyone looked and said last year, yes, no question, quarterbacked an incredible season in the National Football League, it probably would have been lesser because we also did just watch him get $500 million. Like, that context does matter. Like, we're all still fresh off and drunk off of all the Patrick Mahomes celebrating we've been doing.
Just two defensive players in this one in the top 10, as we said, Aaron Donald and Stephon Gilmore.
And listen, Aaron Donald should be in the top three as long as he's playing and playing at the level he's playing at. Again, no one is better at their position by a wider margin than Aaron Donald is at his position than anybody else in football. That's how I perceive Aaron Donald. But when you have a list of top 10 that includes two running backs in an era where the running back really isn't valued.
Oh, Christian McCaffrey is a different type of running
back.
Different than Derrick Henry.
Without question. Sure. But then you don't have Julio Jones in the top 10 list. Well, he's still the best receiver in football for me. And it's taking nothing away from Mike Evans or Michael Thomas. Just that combination of size, strength, and speed, I'm taking that guy every time.
Mina Kimes brought this up when I was talking to her the other day, that players still really like running backs. And you hear this, like, it's the constant tension between what we see in the media and what goes on in locker rooms all the time of you're told in every defensive meeting the first thing we got to do is stop the run in all this. And you look at those players that so many guys, if you're a box defender, if you're a defensive lineman or a linebacker working in there, you're thinking, all right, that's the guy I'm going to have to tackle. That's the guy I'm spending most of my time occupied with. And so, yeah, I'm sure if you're an NFL defensive player and you think back of 2019 and Derrick Henry and having to deal with that battering ram, not only clobbering you in the box, but getting to the open field, part of you would probably say, well, yeah, as a player, I know what the hell I had to deal with last year. And so I think that perspective, the way we all perceive value position-wise, and the way that NFL players and people currently in locker rooms look at those guys and say, yeah, I know what you did last year and it was incredible, kind of shows you part of what goes into the list in addition to a ton of apathy. A ton of apathy goes into this list.
All right, so you're making the list, Mike Golic. I'm looking at you, Greg. Your list right now, 1, 2, 3, what would it be?
Oh, I have Patrick Mahomes. It would probably be all the quarterbacks. It would probably be Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson. I'd be very tempted to put Aaron Donald in the top three. But I understand it's a quarterback league. I understand, you know, and I know the Rams did get to a Super Bowl with Aaron Donald, but you know a lot of times it's going to be the quarterback, though you could say for San Francisco it wasn't so much the quarterback getting to the Super Bowl. So it certainly
they decided not to let him throw.
Yeah, but it would be tough for me not to go those three quarterbacks, though if I who would I take out? If I wanted to put Aaron Donald number three, if we all think those three quarterbacks are in the top three and you wanted Aaron Donald in the top three, who are you dumping out?
Who are you dumping out of that group? I think for this, for right now, it's probably Russell Wilson coming off of last season.
Which just shows, again, a guy that has never gotten an MVP vote,
which is ridiculous,
in his life.
Well, look at what the two teams have done there. This is also an example of team building. The Ravens and the Chiefs have gone all in on the best parts of their quarterbacks, and the Seahawks want to be a run-first team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Ravens are definitely a run-first team.
But the Ravens do that because their quarterback, they use their quarterback as a weapon.
Exactly right.
The Ravens looked at Lamar and said, let's put him in a position to be a great part of our run game and exploit the deep passing area where he's had success in this. Russell Wilson Seahawks offense and what they're trying to do out there under Brian Schottenheimer is run the ball in obvious situations, occasionally use your quarterback who might be the best outside of Lamar Jackson read option quarterback in the NFL, and not let him be a dynamic drop back passer like we've seen him do for long stretches of his career. It's mind-blowing and frustrating.
Your top three, Junior.
My top three, Pat, Lamar, Russ. I think it'd be pretty easy there, and then you go Aaron Donald at number four, Zach Martin at number five. There you go. He's going to be in there. The one that I think that honestly could be higher in all this too is George Kittle.
Yeah,
I think in this league, when you have a weapon like that, and we've seen it, Gronk on his best day
but
was such a game changer.
He's not really a blocker. Oh wait,
see that's the thing about George, because I think do we all think it's Kittle and Kelce?
Yes.
As the two best.
Yes.
But what separates Kittle is his ability to block.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. That he is a threat. As a blocker as well as a receiver.
Despite what some people want to tell you.
Golic and Wingo
is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests do join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Wait a minute. Zach, you mentioned Zach, right? He went to Notre Dame, didn't
he?
Yes,
he did.
Well, coming up next, two college football models that could become a trend involving, you know, some school with gold. We'll get to that after this.
Are you calling us models?
No. 100% no.
Are you sure?
Yes.
You seen my haircut in that clip we just put on Twitter.
Oh, there was no haircut there. That was just hair. There was no cut. There was just hair.
Raindrop. Mop top.
It's Golic and Wingo.
You can't have your cake and eat it. You can't. That's not the issue. You can eat your cake and still have it. See what I mean? If you have your cake, you eat it. That's fine. It's not that. You can't eat your cake and still have it. Well, there you go.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So see, what happens is.
Oh, no, no.
You have a plate.
No.
You have your cake, and then you eat it. The hard part is eating your cake and still having it. We've been butchering that phrase for centuries.
No, we've been using it right, and you're overthinking it.
No, it's 100% wrong.
But forgetting all that, there'll be cake here tomorrow.
There will be plenty of cake here tomorrow.
That's
Golic and Wingo.
Okay, well, let's go down the list of what we think will be here tomorrow. Cake, donuts, bacon.
And dogs.
And dogs. All right, we're good with that.
My God, Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I think we're supposed to get you caught up on a little bit of what's trending right here. So I'm going to do that real quick for you guys before we lean back into all of the best things about someone actually having their cake and eating it too, meaning Notre Dame, because life is great. Anyway, Joe Kelly was handed an 8-game suspension by Major League Baseball for his role in a benches clearing incident that occurred at Minute Maid Park in Houston on Tuesday night. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts got a 1-game suspension, and Houston Astros manager Dusty Baker was fined an undisclosed amount, the MLB announced on Wednesday afternoon. Kelly's going to appeal that suspension, which under the 60-game format accounts for more than 13% of the schedule, the equivalent of about 22 games in a 162-game season. Meanwhile, Sabrina Ionescu scored 33 points and added 7 boards and 7 assists in her second WNBA game, but the Liberty fell 93-80 to the Dallas Wings. Ionescu was 11 of 20 from the floor and 6 of 10 from 3, where she struggled in her first outing. Her teammate Satu Sabali had 12 points and 4 boards for Dallas. In all, 10 rookies played in that game. And lastly in the NFL, Giants tackle Nate Solder and Chiefs running back Damian Williams became the latest NFL players to opt out of the 2020 season. The Chiefs drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round of April's draft. Caesars has already shifted his odds in light of that option for basically everything. 250-1 to 75-1 for NFL MVP, 75-1 down to 20-1 to win the rushing title, and from 11-2 to 4-1 to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. And Virginia Tech cornerback Caleb Farley, a projected first-round pick in the upcoming draft, became the first high-profile college player to opt out of the upcoming season with the coronavirus pandemic. Farley's mother died in 2018 from breast cancer, and so he has concerns about exposing any of the rest of his family. Mel Kiper's latest grade was a first-round grade on Farley, who's ranked among the second tier of corners in the 2021 draft. What's Trending is brought to you by Redbox. Rent Scoob at Redbox tonight. Scooby-Doo, Shaggy, Mystery Inc. discovers that Scooby's secret legacy could be the key to stopping a global dog apocalypse. Visit Redbox.com for all the ways to watch.
All right, Golden Wingo here with you. So Caleb Farley won't be playing in the ACC this year for Virginia Tech, but Notre Dame, if we're going forward with the college football season, is going all in because it suits them.
Well, it doesn't. They were asked to come in, and it's a win-win. It's on both sides.
It does suit other people. There's no question.
Absolutely
about it.
Right. It works for this particular time. It works for both the ACC and for Notre Dame. So they're going to play a 10-game conference schedule and then one non-conference game. Notre Dame normally will have six ACC opponents on their schedule each year because the rest of their sports are in the ACC. So now it will be 10 and then one non-conference game. And that's the way they're going to roll right now. No two divisions anymore. It's going to be 15 team in this in one division in this conference. The two highest winning percentages will play for the ACC championship. Notre Dame and Clemson are already scheduled to play a regular season game this year, and there are the thought that maybe they would play twice, and again, for the ACC championship. Time will tell, A, if that happens, B, if the season even happens. But all money will be split evenly amongst the 15 teams, including Notre Dame's money they get from NBC for broadcasting their home games. And Notre Dame is splitting that 15 ways for the
big
ACC.
Money. Let's not be clear.
It definitely
big
is.
Money.
So it's a win for both sides in this.
Yeah, I think that's it. Like, people look at the situation and say, well, Notre Dame just gets to waltz in whenever they want, which to some extent they do. And that's part of being right, wrong, or indifferent. Whatever you think of Notre Dame, they're one of the biggest brands still in college
football.
And so when you're a value add to that like that, that's the reason the ACC even entered into this agreement to begin with, because Notre Dame's proximity value to football, we know their real value to the other sports, allows you to go out here and create something like the ACC network.
All right, point of parliamentary procedure for both of you. In your perfect world going forward as Notre Damers, and by the way, you cannot walk 5 feet anywhere in this house without seeing something related to Notre Dame. Would you want to be in a conference going forward because of the protection it might provide you the way things are going? Or would you want to still remain as an outlier and an independent?
I would remain an independent. Unless from a financial standpoint or the landscape changes to the point where they needed to be in a conference for this, depending on where we end up playoff-wise. The only way I would do that, if it was better for Notre Dame overall to be in a conference football-wise. Other than that, I would still say be independent.
Exactly, because you're still afforded to play. A lot of the traditional rivalries for Notre Dame exist in the Pac-12 with SC, in the Big Ten with Michigan and Michigan State and all these folks. And I think in this, what people were hoping is that the ACC would use this opportunity to strong-arm Notre Dame into joining a conference and say, we're not giving you this unless you commit to us going forward. But everyone else forgets that, again, this has already been mutually beneficial. Notre Dame is coming with and offering that NBC money because they understand the ACC is doing them a favor here in a difficult time, giving them and helping them out with four of those games that they were going to need on the schedule to be viable in all this. But Notre Dame's presence around the ACC has been helpful. So there was no reason for one to come in and try and big boy the other in this scenario when it works out well for everyone. So no, I would go back to being independent until we get to super conferences, massive realignment, the things that are off in the not too distant
and
college
I was about
football.
To say, how far do you think that is, though?
I think that's probably like a 10-year conversation as far
really?
As that. Between 5 and 10 in that range, like it's going to probably more closely coincide with when we do massive overhauls of the college football playoff system.
Yeah.
And that's tied up in contracts that aren't going to be revisited for a while.
So now we have the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the ACC all have their things set. The two that I mentioned first are all just conference games. The ACC won conference plus one, and their caveat was your non-conference game has to be in a state where there is an ACC team. So they got that rule in there or protocol in there. We have not yet heard from the SEC or the Big 12, and that could play into that different non-conference because we do see non-conference. The ACC matched up against SEC all the time in some big yearly games we've seen. So we're going to need to see how that is going to be affected, if affected at all. Because remember, too, if the SEC or anybody goes to just conference games, no more of those you know, FCS games or such, the games where the smaller teams coming
Citadel
get paid a bunch of money, which, by the way, that money helps out their program without question.
Of course it does.
But if you go conference only, those games won't be happening either.
Yep, and think of those like Clemson and South Carolina is the one that jumps the most to mind, right? Because like you said, it has the non-conference opponent has to take place in the home state of that ACC institution. So technically, whether it was a home or road game, Clemson and South Carolina could play each other under those rules. Florida State in the same boat there. There are a number of others, unless the SEC decides different. And that's the difficult part of the timing of this is because everyone didn't decide together, now as it goes along here, the SEC, you're potentially painted as the bad guy if all of a sudden you're the one that balks at that 10+1 model. Exactly.
Well, it's interesting, right? They're not all coming this together because we have not come together on how to deal with this as a country.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's the whole point of this. Certain states are doing things one way and certain states are doing things another way. And that, in many ways, has led to the reason why we're still dealing with all of this.
Well, and like how you can go about doing protocol with how regional this is, because the ACC was able to come out and say, we've got set protocol for fall sports. We've got set protocol for the contact sports and how we're going to go about doing this, that we can say for our conference, they probably weren't going to get that leverage with everybody else.
All right, but this we do know. The NBA is coming back tonight, and it's going to come back with a bang starting tonight. We'll get to that and what we think about the NBA. Remember, it was March 11th when it went away. It's finally back. Golic and Wingo with you on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.